We're here. We're queer. Get used to it.
What did that girl just say, girl?
Hello and welcome to Queer Conundrums, a proudly out podcast that dives into issues facing the rainbow community. I'm your host, Gemma Davidson, a bisexual feminist just trying to do her best. This episode, we're looking into politics and how that affects the mental health of minorities, specifically discrimination laws and what impacts they have on the queer community. This is an essential topic to be educated on, with the new Religious Freedom Bill posing new threats to people's rights. I'll be chatting to many professionals like lawyers and professors to get a better understanding of what is happening and what we should be aware of. But before we jump in, it's time for our lighthearted start to the episode.
The Queer Frontier.
Queer Frontier looks at new and exciting innovations that are being led by queer folks. This week, we're talking about MasterChef Season 12, Back to Win, the season with all the audience favourites. One of these people is Khan Ong from Season 10. He is our Queer Frontier focus today because of how he is using his reality TV fame for good. Every episode, Khan has been wearing a different colour of the same t-shirt with the words, "You are loved," appearing just above his apron. Well, Khan was flooded with messages about this shirt choice, and it was revealed that it was planned as a fundraiser with a friend at the sweater club. The idea was already in motion, but when Khan was offered the chance to come back to MasterChef, he knew he could use it to bring some positivities. The shirts are on sale at the Sweater Club website, with $10 from every sale going towards Minus 18, the LGBT plus youth organisation based in Melbourne. Khan has a special connection with Minus 18, as he used their social services and attended their events growing up as a safe space. Well done, Khan, for making the most of your TV presence.
If there is a plebiscite, I'll vote no.
But I think the word marriage is for between a man and a woman. I have concerns about, you know, of children in same-sex marriage.
I did remind her I've got a bet with you that you'll change your mind within 5 years.
I fear that's a bet you're likely to lose.
From the moment of invasion, Captain Arthur Phillips brought with him the beginnings of homophobia, with Phillips calling for only two crimes to be deserving of death: murder and sodomy. The first major gay group was formed in 1970 and was called the Campaign Against Moral Persecution Incorporated, or CAMP. They had publicly homosexual founders who were happy talking about their sexuality with journalists. This led to a media frenzy and allowed CAMP to grow much bigger than the founders ever expected. In 1978, on the 24th of June, 500 people marched on the streets of Sydney for International Homosexuality Solidarity Day. What began peacefully was met with police brutality and 53 arrests. However, the date would be forever remembered as it evolved to become the annual Sydney Mardi Gras. By the 1980s, some states began removing their laws criminalising homosexuality, but the 80s also meant the devastation of the AIDS crisis. This brought with it death, stigma, and further bigotry. The 90s led to gays being allowed in the military and forcing Tasmania to remove its anti-gay laws in 1997. In the early 2000s, there was success in law reform, but there are also issues with the Liberal Howard government. They explicitly excluded same-sex couples from the Marriage Act and had plans to ban same-sex adoption if elected in 2008. Instead, the Grubb government chose to remove discrimination, with Gillard making gender X an option on passports, and in 2013 made it unlawful to discriminate against queer people. The late 2010s focused on the marriage equality debate, with its eventual climax of the national plebiscite, with the population voting yes in 2017. This led to the legislation of marriage equality and the Religious Freedom Bill as a direct response.
The context can't be ignored. The people who brought that legislation forward, their views as being outwardly religious can't be ignored. And the material that was submitted to the Ruddock Inquiry also can't be ignored.
That was Erin Fred, community lawyer at Fitzroy Legal Service. I spoke to her over the phone, as well as her colleague, Paul Kidd, to get a better legal understanding about this new Religious Freedom Bill.
Look, there's no question that religious freedom is an important issue. The real question is whether it's an important issue in Australia. The bill that's going before the federal government creates hierarchy, if you like, where protection of a person's religious freedom is seen as privileged above the protection of other groups in society.
I wanted to see what this would mean for different people within the community, so I decided to call an expert.
Hello, Gemma. My name's Peter Robinson. I'm a senior research fellow at Swinburne University, and I've been researching the lives of gay men since the early 2000s, and the gay world is my area of expertise.
So I first wanted to talk to you about the difference in generational queerness, because I noted that you've done a fair bit of research about different ages and the different experiences of those people, even though they might not be as expressed and represented as they should be as a part of the community. There is the aging population of gay people. What do you think could be the effects of this religious freedom bill?
This is, I think, a very serious matter, and I'm not sure that the lobby groups for gay men and lesbians, for the queer community, are as aware as they could be about how important this is. But a very large number of care and aged accommodation facilities in Australia are run by religious organisations. Some are more tolerant than others. It has to be remembered that when gay liberation was developing in the late 60s, there was support from the Uniting Church and some non-conformist churches, even some members of the then Church of England, what's now the Anglican Church. That has to be borne in mind. So churches have not always been opposed to queer people, and there are some that are actively supporting of queer people in 2020. There are, however, those that are not. The legislation that you refer to could mean that some aged care accommodation facilities run by religious organisations that are not accepting of queer people would either not admit them or make life difficult for them when they're there. And I do think that many gay men and lesbians over the age of 60 are aware of this and concerned by it.
Yes, I definitely think the workplace could become a very dangerous and verbally abusive place for queer people and other minorities because of the fact that it would mean that a statement of religious belief would then not be considered discrimination, even if it's hurtful. What sort of experience have you had with your research into the history of homosexuals and their workplace experiences?
My most recent book is on gay men's working lives. And I suppose over the three cohorts that I looked at, the cohort that were in the workplace before gay liberation had a relatively easy time because they weren't out. Most of those men kept their sexual preference hidden and passed as straight in the workplace. The baby boomers, that is to say men who are aged 60 and over now, had a more difficult time of it in the workplace because some of them took the openness about their sexuality into the workplace and there came across some fairly active discrimination. The effect of discrimination is influenced by class and occupation. So you can, for example, nowadays, or when I remember interviewing 15 years ago or more, a senior partner in a very establishment law firm in Melbourne who was about to have a child, he and his partner were about to have a child with a lesbian couple, and he was out in the law firm. And his sexuality had had no effect on his career. And on the other hand, I suppose the most chilling story that I recorded in my book is of a New Zealand man who was married and then was slowly coming out. And when in the country town it was found out that in fact he was meeting same-sex attracted men for sexual encounters, he was threatened when he walked into the abattoirs where he worked and he was a manager, and all the men in the abattoirs took up large steel knives and banged them on the stainless steel tables and chanted some sort of homophobic slogan. So that's a real example of very frightening homophobia at work. I do recall there was one life story I focused on where a man in his 30s with a background in psychology was being bullied by a homophobic boss, and he took the matter to management, and management supported him, and the homophobic boss was told to apologise and change his behaviour. So that's a good example of where legislation in place can reinforce rights in the workplace for gays and lesbians.
While Peter gave me a perspective of the community I didn't know about, I decided I wanted to discuss with a co-host with more links to my own identity with Rebecca Dominguez. You were the president and co-founder of Alliance Victoria.
That's correct, yes. We were formed in 2010, so we're now 10 years old.
Wow. So how have discussions about the Religious Freedom Bill been like in your groups?
So many people who are multigender attracted found the postal plebiscite on marriage equality such a harmful period and very upsetting. And right now they're seeing this Religious Freedom Bill discussion as being all of that all over again.
I definitely agree that it was a traumatic time, and especially for the bi community.
Well, there was a lot of erasure of the bi community during that period. A lot of people talked about gay and lesbian people being able to be married while not talking about bisexual people in same-sex relationships. The bi community has really poor outcomes for mental health. It's definitely something that the community struggles with, and these debates about our right to exist and our right to access services are really harmful.
What is it about the bi community that makes it more vulnerable to mental health issues?
It's the minority stress. So minority stress is the marginalisation experience that we have as being group that's minoritised by society and therefore not treated the same way as a straight person would be or other more privileged groups. And as much bisexual people struggle in a lot of well-being areas. So one of the hardest things for bisexual people is finding community, because people judge your sexual orientation based on the person you are in a relationship with. So even though I'm married to a bisexual man, people would automatically assume that I'm straight.
Yeah, that seems to be a common problem where people's relationships for bisexuals completely negates their sexuality. There is such a difficulty with identity and with community for bisexuals. Why do you think that is?
There's also not as many out bisexual people, so there's not as many bisexual role models. There's a lot of violence perpetuated against bisexual people. The higher rates of intimate partner violence, higher rates of sexual assault. But it's sort of thought that this is because people feel threatened by bisexuality in ways that they wouldn't feel threatened by having a monosexual. And then you add on other factors like the more likelihood of people being poor if they're bisexual, which feeds into homelessness and or an ability to access help for your mental health because you don't have the money to pay for medication or you don't have the money to pay for therapy and all that sort of stuff. It just sort of piles on and increases the stress that bisexual people experience.
Lastly, I had a chat with Deborah Dempsey over the phone about rainbow families and their struggles during all of this.
This debate has been going on for a number of years about whether children need a mother and a father. It seems to me that a lot of conservative social commentators and deeply religious people, well, yeah, they have a problem with gay marriage. They have an even bigger problem with the idea that gay people might have children. But really, there's simply no research evidence to support.
Yeah, well, children were talked about and these families were talked about as if they were hypothetical, even though they're already around.
So it's not like gay families are a new thing. You know, there are a lot of same-sex parented families in the Australian community already. The children are growing up in these families. They're going to schools. They're in school communities. It was like the plebiscite just gave some people license to just say really nasty and abusive things about the families that these children were already being raised in. So I think a lot of queer activists argued, and rightly so, that it was very harmful to children who already exist.
Thank you for joining me. This has been Queer Conundrums. And as always, remember to be out loud and extremely proud.
That's all.